Hi, I'm Ahmed Shahabuddin, filling in for Femi Okay, and you're in the stream. Today, a look at big oil and greenwashing. Environmental groups say savvy ads and social media from energy companies are distracting the public from the real impact of fossil fuels. Should those ads be regulated or even banned? If you have an opinion on that or anything else, jump into our live chat on YouTube, and you too can be part of the stream. Joining us today, we have Jeffrey Supran, a research fellow at Harvard University and co-director of the Climate Social Science Network. In Brussels, Belgium, Sylvia Pastorelli, a climate and energy campaigner with Greenpeace. And in Washington, D.C., Rebecca Lieber, senior climate reporter with Vox. Jeffrey, let's start from, you know, the definition itself. What is greenwashing? Why is it so problematic? And what does it really look like?
Sure. Greenwashing is an umbrella term for a variety of misleading communications or practices, usually exhibited by the fossil fuel industry, to intentionally or not induce a false positive perception about their environmental performance. So to put it more simply, it's when an oil company talks green but acts dirty. And as to the scale, it's massive. It's now one of the dominant forms of public communications of propaganda by the fossil fuel industry. Over the last 30 years, just the five largest fossil fuel companies in America have spent something like $3.6 billion on what's called corporate reputational advertising. So, you know, I think most of your viewers will actually have been exposed to these ads one time or another.
Right. And, you know, it's ads, but it's also on social media. Of course, Sylvia, if you look at this tweet from ExxonMobil, "We're supporting the goals of the Paris Agreement," with a little gif there explaining how they think they're doing that. And, you know, Sylvia, I have to ask you, I mean, it seems as if greenwashing at its most basic is really just when a company tries to appear more green than it is, as we just heard. But what is this morphing into? I mean, how is this becoming maybe more sophisticated? What is the real problematic element?
It's a very good question, and I think that the tweet that you brought up as an example is great, because we're talking about advertisement, and we're used to think about advertisement as talking about products, specific products. But the advertisement that we're seeing nowadays from fossil fuel companies very rarely display a product that they're trying to sell. And it's a lot more than just selling the product itself. I don't think any of us has seen recently a fossil gas pipeline on a fossil fuel company ad or a barrel of oil. Mm-hmm. What they do is exactly promoting the brand as a green brand, promoting the company as a relevant part of the solution to the climate crisis, which we know they are primarily responsible for. Mm-hmm. And they do this by highlighting climate pledges that have very little basis in they're not matched in a day-to-day business that these companies have.
And Rebecca, you know, just hearing that, you know, we have a tweet from Mary Heglar on Twitter saying, in response to a tweet from BP, it's not fair that they get to be both the problem and the solution. Now, on the face of it, that does seem a bit maddening, right, for people who care about the climate, or at least odd. I'm curious, in your research and your work, what can you tell us about how greenwashing actually impacts the public's perception of what these oil companies do, rather than just what they represent, but what they're actually accomplishing?
Yeah, these examples highlight the theme that oil companies benefit from appearing to be part of the solution, that they're serious about climate change, because that means they can actually be in the room with policymakers and seem like they're being serious on climate science. And by being in that room, they can start to influence really important matters like timelines of how and when we address climate change, and definitions like what counts as clean energy and how natural gas fits into that equation. Mm-hmm. Shaping the public perception is definitely an important part of shaping political perception, because by appearing serious and like they're talking about solutions, they do camouflage that they are indeed a part of the problem.
Right. And I know I see you nodding there, Jeffrey. You wanted to add something?
Yeah, I was just going to build on what Rebecca was saying. You know, the strategic purpose of the oil industry's greenwashing is to make it like look like they're doing more than they really are. And the end goal of that is to lend this industry an aura of scientific and environmental authority and credibility. Our own research has shown that greenwashing is one powerful discourse, amongst others, that together creates what we call a fossil fuel savior framing of the climate crisis. And that's exactly to what Mary Hegler was saying in her tweet, that they position themselves in a very insidious way as the trustworthy solution and innovator, you know, to get us out of this problem that primarily is associated with the burning of their products.
Yeah, it's quite odd, even just to me. You know, well, on that note, we asked several major oil companies to join this discussion, but they declined our offer. So let's listen to two energy CEOs, in their own words, talk about the future of the business. This is Ben van Beurden of Royal Dutch Shell and BP CEO Bernard Looney. Take a listen.
The way the world produces and uses energy is visibly changing. But to meet the most ambitious goals of the Paris Agreement, change needs to happen faster. Shell is becoming an energy business for the future, and it's playing its part to help drive that change.
We want to change because it's the right thing for the world, and it's a tremendous business opportunity for BP. We're heading to net zero, and there is no turning back.
Sylvia, you're smirking. When you see that ad, Sylvia, I see the giggle there. But it's serious stuff. I mean, what comes to mind?
I mean, from what I'm saying, that this is almost textbook greenwashing, especially from two companies that we know are still massively investing in fossil fuels. And I'm sure you have noticed that what they're showing to display in these ads is nothing like their business. What we're looking at, what we're seeing in these ads is, wind farms and solar panels and, blue sky, green fields. And this doesn't reflect at all the reality of what the business is. Mm-hmm. We have recently, with Greenpeace and Dismog, we have recently published a report that looks exactly into the advertisement of six major fossil fuel companies. Mm-hmm. Over 3,000 advertisements from different social media platforms. And what this report has found is that essentially almost two-thirds of all these advertisements are greenwashing. Mm-hmm. That is either overemphasizing exactly this very marginal investments that they have in renewables or false solutions, so, what we would call false solutions.
So in your mind, this is very deliberate, including the terminology that's being used. Jeffrey, I see you nodding, and I know that your research early on, back when this was in its nascent days, uncovered something kind of revealing about where the term carbon footprint comes from, and this idea that we all need to be very aware of, you know, our role, but maybe it's a deflection from, you know, the actual problem. I want to ask you, in that video from the CEOs, phrases like net zero and carbon neutral, what do these words mean to you? What's net zero?
Right. So these are, thank you for showing those, because these are brilliant illustrations of two of the key techniques used by greenwashers, which are language and imagery. So to take language first, they use these terms like net zero, carbon neutral. They just throw out terms like the Paris Agreement that make us really start to see these communicators in some way consistent with the things they're talking about. But the reality is, you know, as Sylvia just mentioned, study after study has shown that no major fossil fuel companies' business models are aligned with the Paris Climate Agreement. And, you know, just to make it really stark, for everything that they're saying about clean energy and change and all that, on average, major oil and gas companies today are spending 1% of their budgets on low carbon technologies, 1% over the last decade. And as Sylvia was saying, that's compared to, you know, the 50, 70, 80, 90% focus of their ads on those things that they're not investing in.
Well, Rebecca, go ahead. Yeah, I was going to ask you to elaborate if you have any other examples as to, like, you know, what this actually looks like. I mean, are they investing in renewable energy? Is it meaningful?
Yeah, and I reported on Jeffrey's report looking at that invention of carbon footprint. So it's good to hear about that here. What oil companies have been doing in the last few years, as they face lots of legal challenges across the world, saying they're not taking climate change seriously, they're pointing to a very small subset of their pollution and saying that they're addressing essentially their production emissions. This is just a small subset of what the oil industry is actually responsible for when it comes to climate change. Really, the biggest impact comes from the products that we consume, like gas, mm-hmm. like the gas powering our electricity, coal, and oil. But when they're saying they're reducing their carbon footprint, mm-hmm. they're talking specifically about production facilities. So they aren't looking at the full problem here. And that's just a piece of what Jeffrey's talking about when he's saying they're not really taking responsibility for their actual impact on climate change.
Well, you know, I know that there have been a lot of different attempts to address the way to solve this. What is the way to address this? And some people, Sylvia, like yourself and other groups like Greenpeace, are suggesting, much like with the tobacco industry, a ban on advertisements, not just for the greenwashing, but from what I understand, a general ban, that they shouldn't be able to promote these products anymore. Is that a bit radical in your mind?
I think that the parallel here is really fitting, the parallel with the tobacco. We have a product, or, you know, we have companies that we know are promoting products and activities that we know are harmful. There's a never-growing body of evidence that says that. We know that this is the major cause of the climate crisis that we're living through right now. We know what we should do to address this climate crisis. And still we see this product, these companies' activities being promoted and advertised at every corner. Mm-hmm. We have done the same for tobacco. Years ago, we knew that it was this product that was harmful, and we simply banned the advertisement of this product. Mm-hmm. Considering the urgency of the climate crisis, the climate and environmental crisis that we're living through, I think that this the idea of banning all advertisement and sponsorship from fossil fuel companies is simply, it's fitting, it's appropriate, it matches the level of urgency.
Rebecca, you want to jump in? We have a lot of people in our YouTube chat, by the way, also jumping in with questions that are along these lines. For example, Hermes saying, do the guests believe that greenwashing should be criminalized as a form of false advertising? Rebecca, does this make sense to you?
Wow, I think these are complicated proposals. I think, of course, whenever you're talking about something like criminalizing, you get into free speech issues. You can get into kind of how you define what is that crossing the line. And one kind of counterpoint to talking about banning fossil fuel advertising is just realizing the reality we're in, where the fossil fuel companies realize they are not popular, that people don't trust their message. So instead, they are also funneling tons of money, millions of dollars a year, into advertising through other messengers. So these might be dark money groups mm-hmm. or third parties that where their connections might be less obvious that they are directly funded by the oil industry, or they might be hiring, and in some of my reporting, influencers who are maybe trusted names on Instagram and social media, and trying to get their message out basically through these other messengers that people might actually trust. And I think when we're talking about banning fossil fuel advertising, it's important to realize it doesn't always fit in these neat boxes.
Right. And I was having conversations with the team, about, if you ban the advertising, you still need the gas and you still rely on the companies. And, we have a lot of different viewpoints on this issue, Jeffrey. Both in our chat and also a comment that was sent to us. For those of you who don't know, there is a new initiative in Europe, the European Citizens Initiative, trying to come up with a new EU law to ban fossil fuel advertising and sponsorships. They think this could be a historic ban, much like we saw with the tobacco industry, as we've referenced earlier. Jeffrey, we also have this video comment that was sent to us from James Watson. He is the Secretary General of Eurogas. I want to get your thoughts at the end of this comment, see what you think.
When brands that people are familiar with are doing a lot of work to advertise the importance of renewable energy to them, it helps society understand that there needs to be an energy transition and that these technologies do work and these technologies are reliable and will help power our futures. And so I would say that it is actually necessary for those companies to be involved in informing public about the energy transition that we need to address the climate emergency.
Jeffrey, two things that stood out to me with that comment, just this idea of it's actually necessary for them to inform the public. Is that what's happening, though? Are they informing the public or are they maybe misleading the public?
Let's be very clear. Greenwashing is through and through a form of propaganda. That's not a radical statement that's based on my own and my colleagues' peer-reviewed research. The fossil fuel industry are masters of this art with a century of experience innovating and inventing, in fact, these contemporary tactics of propaganda. And they've been winning at this communications war for a long time. And so, you know, in my personal opinion, initiatives such as the Greenpeace one that you mentioned are really valid, you know, attempts to confront this dangerous and misleading messaging. And one of the most important approaches that should be taken today to confront the climate crisis. You know, just to throw in one extra point, you know, looking back at the BP ad where he was saying there's no going back, and the gentleman just now saying it's really important for us as a fossil fuel industry to highlight all these technologies. I'd just like to politely remind them that BP launched a $100 million per year Beyond Petroleum campaign in the early 2000s, mm-hmm. putting itself forward, just like we're seeing again, as a clean, green company. And they did exactly the opposite of what the CEO is saying they would never do, which is they went back. They stopped investing. They doubled down on fossil fuels. So there's a lot more talk than action. And so I think, you know, a natural skepticism about mm-hmm. this greenwashing is perfectly valid.
If you take a look, go ahead. I see you wanted to jump in.
Thank you. May I also add on to this, to what we just heard? Again, with, you know, we're hearing the focus being put on citizens, people having access to the right information so that people, individual citizens, can be informed and make the right choices. And again, here the onus has been shifted from the company to people, while at the same time we know that advertisement doesn't equal necessarily access to information. Mm-hmm. Advertisement is advertisement. Mm-hmm. They're pushing a advertisement. We know what these means. It's pushing a product, and advertisement, you know, the first description of what an advertisement is, you know, trying to push a product no matter mm-hmm. how much you actually need it. It's not about information per se. And again, it's putting the blame on consumers, making sure that you and I make mm-hmm. the right choices rather than fossil companies.
And just a great segue there, Jeffrey. You know, on BP's Twitter account, tweeting out right here, you can see the first step to reducing your emissions is to know where you stand. Find out your carbon footprint with our new calculator and share your pledge today. It certainly feels like, you know, it's making me question what I'm doing and what my footprint is. And it's kind of putting the focus on myself, as we just heard Sylvia say. And your research, as we referenced earlier, you know, they created this term carbon footprint. And what was the aim back then? How has the propaganda, as you call it, of greenwashing evolved since those early days back in the 2000s?
Sure, and I certainly wouldn't take credit for all of these findings. A number of investigative journalists and scholars have been behind unearthing the fact that the very notion of a personal carbon footprint was first promoted and popularized by none other than BP. As I said, as part of a major $100 million per year marketing campaign between 2004 and 2006. They did it across all media. They had billboards, TV, radio. They made the first carbon footprint calculator. They put it on their website and they say, what on earth is a carbon footprint calculator? Go find out yours and how you personally can take action. And so here we are, a decade and a half later, a new carbon footprint calculator, and the same messaging of individualized responsibility. Mm. Of course, you and I, we all play a role in this crisis, but you and I are passively guilty, born right. into a fossil fuel society. These entities are actively guilty, actively working to lock us in to this fossil fuel society. And so, yeah, my research and others has shown that numerous companies, particularly we've looked at ExxonMobil, have used systematically biased language in their public communications mm-hmm. to fixate on consumer responsibility.
Jeffrey, you bring up ExxonMobil. Yeah. I know that you informed us, and many people are remarking on the very bizarre reality that is that ExxonMobil is spending more on advertising its research on biofuels than doing the actual research itself. So, you know, allocating money to say, look what we're doing, but what are they actually doing? And I frame it in this way to you, Rebecca, because we have a video comment that came in from Lauren McDonald, who confronted the CEO of Shell infamously perhaps, at a TED event where things unraveled on stage. Take a listen to what she said.
Greenwashing is so dangerous because it stops people from realizing that these big polluting companies do not have our best interests at heart. And we need to fully understand this problem to be able to tackle it. We need to fully understand that these companies have no intention of helping to create a just society. If they did, they wouldn't be continuing to pull oil out of the ground and pollute our world. We need to take the power away from oil companies, especially, to be able to advertise their lies to us.
Rebecca, what is your reaction to that?
Yeah, I just think of the overlap of how closely related misinformation is to greenwashing and how important it is to have journalism and to have scientists and academics like Jeffrey putting that word out there and taking that close look at language. And just to give an example of how important language is and how fully ingrained the oil industry propaganda is here, is just think about natural gas. The phrase natural gas, natural implies good. And the oil industry has really capitalized on that inherent kind of association with natural gas as this being cleaner, a cleaner technology than coal, a cleaner source for fuel. So I think it's important to inspect our language, especially for journalists who are a big part of that equation of how to communicate with the public.
Jeffrey, when we talk about language, which we've spoken about in the past, I'm curious, you know, with the methane of it all, if you will, I mean, advertising ethics boards are saying it's absolutely not clean. The science is there. It's, you know, so is there any way that these oil companies can actually defend themselves and say this is not a deliberate attempt to misrepresent these technologies that we heard from the guest from Eurogas saying that they have a right to explain to their audience, to the public, that these technologies work, that they're part of the solution. You know, what can be done outside of banning ads? I mean, is this where government steps in? I know there's initiatives with an organization called Normative in Europe, Scandinavia, I believe, that's being funded by Google. Where's the solution?
Well, there are a number. One initiative being proposed is that fossil fuel ads should come with tobacco-style warning labels to alert the public to the fact that this may be misinformative messaging. Actually, the case in point is you know, I think one way to do that would be, it would be fair if the industry were allowed to spend a portion of time of its adverts focusing on low-carbon technologies commensurate, consistent with the fraction of their spending on those technologies. So they should be allowed to spend about 1% of the ad talking about solar and wind. But, you know, in that Shell ad you showed, I was making quick notes. We saw a sun, we saw a sky, we saw solar cells, and we saw wind farms. Right. We saw one image of a gas pump. So that's about a 4-to-1 ratio in the wrong direction.
Right.
So
very, you know, very interesting, even just symbolically and visually. Sorry, I don't mean to cut you off, but it made me think, Rebecca, I want to ask you, I mean, we have a kind of potential unprecedented moment where it seems, I know Sylvia has called it historic, oil executives are going to be testifying to U.S. Congress this month regarding their role in climate misinformation, disinformation. What would you like to happen at the hearing? Do you think that this is a watershed moment?
It could be. I think we're at a point where the public in the U.S., I think journalists, I think politicians are realizing that this is the culmination of a decades-long campaign from the industry. So we're at the starting point of getting those answers. So I wouldn't compare this to the kind of aftermath of tobacco, but just at the beginning of discovery of what is under the cover. So I think one thing that I would like to learn from these upcoming hearings is the role that the PR industry has also played here. Who else is working with the oil industry to get this message out there?
And that's an important question that's being echoed in our YouTube chat by many of our guests. I want to ask you very quickly, Sylvia, is this a historic moment, do you think, what's happening at Congress this month?
It definitely is. I mean, it is showing that you know, that's, we are at a moment in time where this conversation are becoming not just you know, radical, same as for, you know, the way it's, the ban, our proposal for a ban,
right,
on
well,
has been,
well,
defined.
Sylvia,
but
forgive me, you say
it's inevitable.
It is inevitable. It's also inevitable that we're running out of time, so I want to thank you for joining us. It's all the time we have. We'll see you next time here on The Stream. Thank you.